Congress, your senator, wherever you live, pass the Clean Water Protection Act. All it does is change the one word back that the Bush administration did, one very deadly word, a word that allows Hiroshima to happen every 9 days right here in America, causing third world conditions and poverty in West Virginia and throughout Appalachia. Larell Scarborough, thank you very much for coming
on
the show. If you want to find out more information about what I do, go to RadioInsideScoop.com. I do a lot of shows on all kinds of issues facing the nation. And thank you very much for listening to Dialogue.
Cussing and it is cussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy again. Let's try this again and see if I can get it right this time. You know, it wouldn't be my first day back behind the microphone after an extended absence if I didn't screw up something. I don't know what I screwed up, though, but I did 4 minutes of show, and I was the only one who heard it. Everybody else will hear it on the rerun stream, though. Trust me, it's awkward silence. So let me just say this again. I'm happy to be home, but what a marvelous, magnificent 5 days I spent among amazing people. The folks who make up the Alliance for Appalachia. It was the week in Washington was brilliant and inspiring. We're on the way to a win. The Clean Water Protection Act has approaching 130 co-sponsors in the House of Representatives. Before too awfully long, we'll have enough co-sponsors to get it out of committee. And I want to tell you, I'll be honest, I hadn't heard so much about him in the past, so I studied up, got to meet him last night. New Jersey is very, very fortunate to have a congressman like Frank Pallone and his incredible staff. Frank Pallone is the lead sponsor of the Clean Water Protection Act, H.R. 1310. And there were in excess of 130 people, maybe 150 people from 13 different organizations, tons of different states, right there in Washington for lobby week. And we absolutely stormed the offices of the House and Senate. We'll get this thing through the House, and we'll get it going in the Senate. I'm convinced of it. The logistics of making all of this happen fell upon the shoulders of some very, very dedicated people who have done an amazing job. And it was like clockwork. It was like watching precision mechanics. Everything just bang, 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 bang. The presentations on how to go about doing this kind of thing were superb. I feel like I got a master class in something by attending this event. And on the way, I cannot say enough for the spirit, the heart, the soul of everyone who attended and those who worked on this at a distance. You know, yesterday there was a Go Green for St. Paddy's Day call-in push, and hundreds of calls went into Congress as a result of folks at a distance wanting to back up the people who were there on the Hill making all of this happen. I know calls went out from Horn listeners to various and sundry representatives all over the country. The coordination was beautiful. And see, the thing is, our efforts are patently honest. And if within the grand scheme of things in the universe, honesty and having no covert interest, no cloaked interest in legislation counts for anything, then H.R. 1310 is going to be a breeze as long as we continue to work on it the way people did, both in Washington, D.C. and all over the country over the last several days. Because you see, the other side, all they have is money. All they have is money and greed and an urge to destroy things that are beautiful and sustaining and the very core essence of what it is to be human on this earth. That's all they have.
All they have is all they have is greed, slimy, filthy, sleazy, oily, slick, nasty greed, and bags of money. We have souls. We have hearts. We have the energy of people who have nothing in this fight except a desire to make a future for our coming generations. To make Appalachia a non-toxic place to live, as opposed to the toxic hellhole that the mountain removers seek to turn it into. I, for one, have trundled my bulk all over Capitol Hill. I don't know how much I walked on the 2 days that I was going back and forth between our home base at Church of the Reformer Lutheran on Capitol Hill and the various Senate and House office buildings. I do know that by the time I finished each day, my feet felt like meat balloons. I was so exhausted last night that I got back to the hotel room and just ran bath water as hot as it would go and tried to sink myself up to my chin in it just to make some of the stress and strain go. What this boils down to is I'm an out-of-shape slob. I need to be doing this. I need to be taking these walks for about a year and get back in shape. No, Cossack, no rides on the private Senate House subway, sorry to say. I was intrigued by it, though. I saw the gateway to it, but I knew better. I'd be in Guantanamo in an orange suit by now if I'd tried that, I suspect. But I watched the staff people that we met with were all more than professional. It is true, by the way, that the federal government is actually run by 20-somethings. With the exception of the elected representatives and senators themselves, I don't think I saw anybody in all these office buildings who was very seldom. Were anyone in the staff offices older than, you know, maybe 30, 35, and mostly in their 20s. It was quite an eye-opening experience. I watched, and by the way, we left Washington, D.C. this morning, and I just got back into the studio about an hour ago. But I've been away from the microphone for so long that I didn't want to not do a show this evening. So I may need your help tonight, just sort of catching up on things that happened. But we left Washington, D.C. this morning, and I feel very proud of myself. I successfully navigated interior D.C. traffic. We stayed at a hotel in Chinatown, and what a what a trip of an experience that was. The first morning I was there, there's so much history to be had in Washington, D.C. The first day I was there, the Starbucks was about 2.5 blocks down the street, across, catty-cornered across from the metro station. And even though I'm decaffeinated, I still got to have something in the morning. And the decaf's not bad. So I trundled myself down the street to Starbucks, and you know me. If I see a sign, a historic marker, whatever, my eyeballs will leap out of their heads, their sockets, looking backward. If I don't stop and read it, so stop and read it, I did. And I was standing next to a nondescript-looking building with a blue awning that said "Walk and Roll Restaurant." Clever, no? Walk and Roll. It was a little stir fry and sushi joint there in Chinatown on H Street. But I look at the sign and I look at the building and I check the photograph on the sign and I look back at the building and yeah, they're the same thing. And there on H Street, I'm thinking 6th and H. I was standing in front of a place known as Mary Surratt's Boarding House. The history geeks in the audience will immediately know what I'm talking about. Mary Surratt's boarding house was visited on numerous occasions by a young heartthrob of the day, a young actor, a man who strutted and fretted his hour upon the stage, who strode the boards of Ford's Theater. A young man by the name of John Wilkes Booth. And he knew a number of people who were staying at Mary Surratt's boarding house. And later, Andrew Johnson, by then president, and later to be impeached president of the United States, would refer to Mary Surratt's boarding house as the nest that hatched the egg. And I just stood there looking at it in dumbstruck wonder. Such a nondescript place, and now a little Asian carryout joint. But an entire world was turned on its ear in that building. After the assassination of Abraham Lincoln, one of the conspirator, the police went around to interview Mary Surratt about the goings-on in her boarding house. She had a son who fought in the Confederate Army. And while they were interviewing her, one of the assassination conspirators walked through the door. A man, I believe, named Wilson. Wilson! No, sorry, different story. That was enough for the cops. They arrested Mary Surratt. And she was later hanged by the neck until dead for having boarders who plotted against the President of the United States. One may argue that most people say that the rise of the national security state happened in this country at the end of the Second World War with the transformation of the OSS into the CIA. You can also make an argument that it begins with the rise of Alan Pinkerton in Civil War Washington, D.C., and in the aftermath of the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. Because mere suspicion was enough to get Mary Surratt executed. To this day, we don't know if she had a hand in it, or if she knew about it, cognizant of. You know, basically, Mary Surratt was treated a lot like we treat here in the 21st century, a lot like we treat some goat herder from the barren, rocky slopes of Afghanistan, where the only evidence against that goat herder is that the person, somebody had a grudge against him, turned in his name and got $5,000 bounty from, you know, you and me, the taxpayers. There's not a lot of difference. You'd think we would learn in, 144 years. Not so much. And we were only five blocks or so from Ford's Theater. Too much time involved with doing what we were doing. Too much time necessary for what we were doing for me to be able to do some of the historical geekery that I'm so fond of. But you could look all around Chinatown and know that you were looking at buildings of real ancient origin, relatively speaking. You know, 1830s construction, 1840s, 1850s, maybe some turn of the century. And standing next to them, concrete monstrosities with all the soul of, with all the soul, as Peter Godbold used to say, of a PowerPoint presentation. But that's what I saw on the way to get a cup of coffee that first morning, and I couldn't walk by the building without feeling a shiver every time after. So but then we went off to Capitol Hill. And we had been fully briefed and fully taught the previous day over at the beautiful, beautiful headquarters of the World Wildlife Fund. World Wildlife Federation, WWF, not the Wrestlers, the guys with the silhouette panda bear logo, World Wildlife Federation. And we were taught in great detail how to go about advocating for legislation in the offices of various and sundry elected representatives. So armed with that knowledge, we headed off on Monday morning and started into meetings. I had my daughters with me, Doodle and Margie, ages 11 and 15. And they, too, threw themselves wholeheartedly into the process. And they went with me, and we visited the offices. And these were perfunctory. I won't say acts of futility, but they were perfunctory acts of courtesy. Because, well, you got to ask your own representatives somehow. If we were to even assume that this process remotely works, it would be incredibly rude, gauche, and untoward not to visit one's own delegation. So we visited the office of Senator Robert Byrd, met with some of his staff. Margie told part of her story. We then visited Senator Rockefeller's office. And I'm so proud of my daughter. She looked at his aide, because you got to understand, Senator Rockefeller will never, ever, ever, ever do anything to impede the destructive practices of mountaintop removal in West Virginia. We're just not that important, you know, West Virginians, to the senator from West Virginia. We're not that important. Communities that are poisoned, communities whose water supplies are imbued with filth and toxins from sludge injections and mountaintop removal, sludge dams and impoundments. The people who live around those things, who are affected by them, who have the dust and detritus and the boulders flying off the sites into the places where they live, those people are just not that important to Jay Rockefeller. And after a lot of us had our say at this table, Margie looked at Senator Rockefeller's aide straight in the eye. Oh, God, I was proud of her. And said, "Does the senator have children?" And I looked at her and said, "Oh, yeah, baby, he's got lots of them." And the aide was nodding. I said, "He's even got grandchildren." And Marky looked at me and said, "Oh." And she looked at Rockefeller's aide and she said, "You know, if he needed help saving his grandchildren and came to me, I'd like to think that I'd care more about his grandchildren than he does about me or my nieces and nephews, because he doesn't." And she said, "I'm here to help save my niece and nephew's future. Wouldn't Senator Rockefeller do the same thing? Wouldn't he want a clean place to live? Wouldn't he want clean water to drink?" And for the first time in that meeting, the legislative aide was rendered mute. Out of the mouths of babes, as the saying goes. We visited Congressman Rahal's office. And frankly, we had better experiences in all three meetings than anyone I'd never been before, but anyone said they'd had. There really is a change of spirit, a change of tone that has taken place on Capitol Hill since the inauguration of President Barack Obama. And I think it is spilling over even into West Virginia's congressional delegation. Now, don't get all beside yourself and think that any of our elected representatives are going to sponsor or co-sponsor this legislation. But sometimes just getting out of the way, you know that old saying, lead, follow, or get out of the way. Sometimes get out of the way is the best thing you can hope for and the best thing someone else can do. And if they'll just get out of the way, we'll let the rest of the Congress solve the problem. We went all over the place. Meetings, I can't even recall all the meetings. But we talked to a lot of people who were very sympathetic. Like I said, the Clean Water Protection Act, H.R. 1310, has a real head of steam in the House of Representatives. It has not, however, been introduced at all in the United States Senate. So if you guys want to be part of this process, if you guys want to be part of this sea change, this fundamental shift, you can get hold of your senators. And I don't care who they are. You can tell them you want a companion bill to H.R. 1310, the Clean Water Protection Act, and you expect your senator to introduce it. If he doesn't introduce it, to co-sponsor it. You expect it. You don't want it. You expect it. Because the only thing, only, the focus, the sum total and effect of the Clean Water Protection Act is it will end valley fills. And it will, by so doing, it will end mountaintop removal. Then we can begin to repair all the damage that the toxic monsters have done to this beautiful region of the country. So that was my last few days. How about yours? As I drove out of Washington, D.C. this morning, listening to the little machine say, turn left, turn right. I got to tell you, those things are the handiest things in the world for inner city traffic. Beats the dickens out of having your passenger, whoever's in shotgun sitting there. I think you turn left here, Bob, because the little lady inside that little GPS box is very authoritative, and they give you a little cartoon to watch as you go. But as I was driving out of Washington this morning, drove right past the United States Treasury. And while I've been kind of in a news vacuum, I have not been able to feed my news Jones like it usually gets fed. Now, I was hearing some things here and there. Had a TV in the room, and while I was quickly fading into sleep at the end of the day, I would see a little something of the news. Saw a little something about AIG again and something about bonuses. And so there was a certain amount of irony involved this cool but not at all cold March morning in Washington, D.C., as we drove out of town down to the intersection with Constitution Avenue and drove by the Treasury. Because as we drove by the Treasury, it looked like the building was on fire. It was some sort of steam vent, of course. But it was just these billowing clouds just pouring out of the building. And I looked at my traveling companions and I said, well, they must have the presses going so hot they're smoking. And I forget who it was, said, no, that's just how fast they're burning up our money on these bailouts. How true. How true. So I do know what's going on with AIG, and there are some other stories coming for the evening. And you know what? I didn't forget. It may be the 18th of March. It may be hump day. It may be downhill to Friday, middle of the week. But for all of us, it's ever so much more. Brothers and sisters!
It's prayer eating. Choir master, please.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah. Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. It's not the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches.
Sing it!
Thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Shanine, Waterly D, Shamalama Ding Dong, I love you. Come on down, brothers and sisters. Come on down the blood-red carpet here in the Cathedral of Common Sense. Lay your hands upon the subwoofer and feel the healing rays of reason flowing through your body. Hallelujah and glory. Amen. This is prayer meeting. Yes, indeed, indeed it is. And here in the Cathedral of Common Sense this evening, we begin with a very unfunny story. Really, really unfunny. He's at it again. That guy in Rome with the fabulous red shoes is at it again. He has opened his mouth about something he knows absolutely knows absolutely nothing about again. Pope Benedict the 16th, one sincerely hopes the first 15 were seriously better than this guy, because he ain't much. Pope Benedict the 16th says that the distribution of condoms is not the answer in the fight against AIDS in Africa. No, sir, they need prayer. Nah, I don't think he got around to saying prayer, but you know how they think. Can't have no condoms in Africa. Even though it prevents the spread of, you know, AIDS. Nope. Benny the old anti-aircraft gunner. Benny says, you can't resolve it, speaking of AIDS, HIV, you can't resolve it with the distribution of condoms. On the contrary, distributing condoms increases the problem. Good afternoon. No, really. This is some of the news I did manage to catch. I kind of wish I had. This is the 21st century equivalent of some befrocked fiend
assaulting Galileo Galilei for having the nerve to suggest that the Earth revolves around the sun. You cannot resolve it with the distribution of condoms. Clink! I hope somebody puts that on his tombstone. You cannot resolve HIV/AIDS with the distribution of condoms. On the contrary, it increases the problem. Because you know how those people are. If you give them condoms, they will be doing it in the street. No, I don't even want to know what kind of an answer he gives if you ask him where babies come from. But if you ask Pope Benedict how AIDS and HIV came to be a problem in Africa, he says it is because of a deficit of ethics in economic structures. It is here that the church can make a contribution. Really? And you're going to do that how? By taking contributions. Oh. A deficit of ethics in economic structures. I don't know what that means in the mind of an addled old octogenarian, former anti-aircraft gunner and member of the Hitler Youth. But there's no doubt that that countries across the globe, the United States, People's Republic of China, et cetera, ad infinitum, have exploited Africa brutally. Belgium, France, Germany, England, for generations, for resources, for human labor treated as a resource, and have plowed that ground and salted the earth afterward. There's no doubt of that, and there's no doubt that there has been a paucity of ethics. But AIDS, HIV, is transmitted by sexual contact. You know that, and I know that, and apparently the only person who doesn't know that is Benny, the rat singer. When you insult a rat, is that a rat zinger? I don't know. Or is that some new disgusting corporate dessert treat from Dolly Madison? Rat zingers, vanilla zingers, chocolate zingers, raspberry zingers, and now rat zingers. Sounds like something Monty Python would come up with. Well, not so much rat in it. It's a deficit of ethics in economic structures. It is here that the church can make a contribution. What kind of contribution can... at the bottom of the article comes the what Mark Twain used to call the snapper. Africa is the fastest growing region for the Roman Catholic Church. Because, you see, Africa doesn't really... there I go like Sarah Palin referring to it like it's a country. The countries on the continent of Africa generally lack the law enforcement and administrative infrastructure to deal with things like kiddie rape. Now, a lot of governments in Africa are dealing with much more broad-scoped problems, like, you know, rebel armies and insurrections in their countries and starving populations. And I guess kitty diddling by priests probably doesn't make it onto the radar. And hence, no country in Africa, according to His Holiness, may have condoms to help inhibit the spread of HIV/AIDS. And of course, the other nice thing is, the babies that aren't HIV positive who get born, well, they just might wind up being people that can be drawn to the bosom of Mother Church and give away a lot of their earnings to it. Because the church isn't growing in the industrialized world. It's dying. It's only growing in places where superstition still reigns supreme. And one of those places is, sadly, the African continent. The saddest thing is that he made this comment on the way to Cameroon. He's in Africa as we speak, telling people there that they have no right to protect themselves against a debilitating, deadly, miserable, horror-inducing disease. The Pope says he wants international solidarity for Africa in the face of the global economic downturn. However, that international solidarity does not include massive plane loads of condoms from the Trojan Condom Company. That is not the solidarity which we are looking for. That is not acceptable solidarity. 7 days he'll be on the African continent, going from Cameroon to Angola. And I'm sure he will see suffering. They always like to get the Pope in some pictures with some suffering people. I'm sure they'll take him around in his bulletproof faithmobile. You can't resolve it with the distribution of condoms. It increases the problem. Now, the only problem that increases is the problem of ginning up new members. You know, all over the place, I was in Washington, D.C., and there's churches, 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 churches. Old churches. In Chinatown, I was directly opposite this incredibly spooky-looking old structure that was the Church of St. Mary, Mother of God. Of course, being me, I immediately thought back to that wonderful scene in our little patron saint movie here on the network, Idiocracy, St. God's Memorial Hospital, St. Mary, Mother of God. I'm sorry, the very concept of God having a mother just kind of makes me go, blah. But that's all with it. So does the idea of Zeus turning himself into a bull and going and getting it on with God knows what. I forget the mythology. Or a swan. Was there a swan involved somewhere along the way? Or, you know, the Dionysian rites where some guy got ripped to pieces by women whacked out of their brains on wine. That was the Minods, wasn't it? I forget. But I looked at that, and I looked at those stones, those magnificent stones, and there was another church and another church and another church, and there were old churches. And I thought about the hundreds and nay, the thousands of people whose hard-earned money in times when money was hard to earn had gone into building those edifices to folly. Now, the Asian continent is home to some of the most profound religious thinking on earth, from the Tao to Confucianism. And, of course, this church offers mass in some Chinese dialect every week. And I was sitting there thinking, wow, if the Tao was my, and I don't mean the D-O-W, the T-A-O, if the Tao was my native religion, how could I ever get away from that and just, because the Tao is fascinatingly mystical and offers answers that I don't think they can know. This 2,000-year-old Johnny-come-lately, no. But I don't know how you could get away from that. But all those churches, all that labor, all that work, all those stones, all that beauty, you know, the spires of lattice lace work iron, And the place, it just loomed there like something dark and foreboding. Right across the street from my hotel room. I mean, I'd look out every evening out of my window when we got back to the room, and I'd wait to see Quasimodo, yes, master, headed up to the bell tower. In fact, by the way, and this kind of made me feel a little, this particular church offered a Tridentine Mass every Sunday. The Tridentine Mass is, of course, the form of the Mass that is favored by the whack jobs like Mel Gibson. It is designated an extraordinary form of the Roman Rite. And apparently Latin Rite Catholic priests are free to use the 1962 version of the Tridentine Liturgy in their private masses in place of what is now the ordinary form of the liturgy. But this Mary Mother of God Church does it every Sunday. It's used as a form of protest in many churches against the reforms of Vatican II. And there really was something. Where's a good hunchback when you need one? But yes, Africa will continue to burn because, and I can't make this up, you can't resolve AIDS with the distribution of condoms. On the contrary, it increases the problem. Good luck to you if you can wrap your mind around that. I can't. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan.
Did you happen to catch what the AIDS rate is in D.C. alone?
Yeah, 3%.
3%. And according to the CDC, 1% is an epidemic. 3% is probably considered a pandemic. Due to the wonderful, loving care of our born-again neocons, I would venture to guess that we have just as many AIDS problems as the African subcontinent does.
Quite possibly, especially in our urban areas.
It's just not mentioned. I know we have just as many as we had at the height of the AIDS terror in the 70s and 80s. When, you know, every time
sure.
you turned around, people were dying from AIDS.
Right, because there's no cure.
Yeah. But I think it's because people are, you know, they're saying no condoms, no condoms, and nobody is being taught the damn things will protect you.
Well, you know, you gotta wonder. I mean, I know there are agencies that try to distribute condoms in African countries.
Yeah.
But what must it be like to be one of those people and pass them out and have a woman or a man say, "We are not permitted to use these, even though we have HIV. We are not permitted to use these, for Holy Father says we'll burn if we do."
Yeah. My only consolation, you can be born with AIDS, and a lot of kids in Africa are born with AIDS because their mothers are infected by their husbands.
Right.
Because they go out and play around with their men friends, or by infected prostitutes. And guess what? They don't know how to protect that child. And so it's born with AIDS. And some of these priests like playing with children. Guess what? It's his priesthood.
Oh, wow.
AIDS is an equal opportunity virus.
Yeah, right. The holy water will not cure it.
No. Enjoy, Betty the Rat. Maybe you can end up with it, too.
Now,
would you like to hear something that'll make you so mad you can't spit? You want to spit?
I'm really in a good mood, but yeah, I guess.
Did you happen to catch Rachel Maddow's show?
No. I've been in a news vacuum. Hold on, wait. Before you go here, though, not a complete vacuum. I got to tell you, Susan, you know how I am about not watching or listening to right-wing stuff unless I have to, but somehow or another it always infects my world.
Yeah.
To get from point A to point B, just using the up button on the clicker on the hotel TV set, I had to go past Fox. And, Fox is always like driving past a car wreck. You just slow down. And, you know, there's Bill O'Reilly talking to Bernie Goldfinger, Bird.
When he came up with his list with Janine Garofalo on it.
No. This was last night. And I catch Bernie Goldberg explaining that it's okay, and it was they showed some clip of Jackie Mason or something.
I guess
I don't know. It was quick, but because that wasn't the fun part. The fun part was watching Billo and Bernie Goldberg in particular explain that calling an African American person a Schwarzer is not in any wise derogatory.
Oh, it's not?
Right. I expected him to cite Mel Brooks in Blazing Saddles or something. See, he's playing an Indian and he calls it. But no, he explained that that's completely okay. It's just a word for black.
Yeah. And that's why the Nazi guards use it at the concentration camps. Oh, my God.
And I didn't have to spend more than all 30 seconds with that to get that little jewel of wing nuttery.
Yeah.
But in that 30 seconds, I picked up something else. I promise. We'll go on to Rachel Maddow. But the other thing I saw, I gotta give props to David in Tennessee, Susan. I don't know if you heard maybe a week or so ago when he said it will find its way onto the radar screen. O'Reilly was horrified, shocked, I'm telling you, that ABC News had sent a TV camera crew to interview Levi Johnston on the breakup.
Oh.
Of him and Bristol. Bear in mind that on this program, David from Tennessee said, keep an eye out for it. Bill O'Reilly claimed they were married.
Yep.
In addition, the irony of Bill O'Reilly criticizing someone for sending out a camera crew to chase somebody down was too, you know, that was like whipped cream on a banana split.
Yeah, she and
so, but the little things that happen on this program with people being, you know, sort of plugged in and analyzing and figuring stuff out long before the for-profit media ever does. It's gorgeous. So, Rachel Maddow.
Okay, Rachel Maddow. I'm sitting there feeling good after countdown, and Rachel comes on and says, oh, cool, I get to watch Rachel, cool. So I'm sitting there doing her thing, watching her, and just digging the show. And then, for anybody who is a veteran or married to a veteran, fasten your seatbelts, folks. I worked for Obama. I wept when he was elected. I cheered when he put up Shinseki as for the VA. Do you know what those people want to do with the VA health care? They want to outsource it to the insurance company.
Oh, I saw some of that before I left. That's just sickening. Surely to God that won't get legs.
I've never felt so betrayed in my life. I got a husband with COPD who spends a lot of time in the VA hospital. He doesn't have any insurance. What do you think's going to happen if they kick to an insurance company?
No, I know.
Oh, by the way, that's a pre-existing condition. You aren't covered.
Yeah, exactly.
To all you Obama supporters, excuse me, I have to say this. You son of a bitch! Pardon me. I had to get it out.
Feeling better now?
Yes. I've been screaming at my delegation.
But it's not formally proposed. This is one of those This is one of those little trial balloons that's limping up past its tether.
Yeah, that's the time to kill it. Because we don't get it, you know, once it's in there in cement. I couldn't believe it. So if you, whether or not you have a veteran in your family, or, you know, even if you just think they should be taken care of, call your congressman or your senator and say, hey, or call the White House. Say, hey, email them. Say, you idiots, what are you thinking of? Don't do this to us. Don't do this to these men. These guys deserve better.
Well, that they do. That they do.
Yeah.
And, I don't have it in me to believe that this could possibly happen. Not looking at it. With the excesses of AIG and others, no. Just no. No.
Well, I have one other thing to say.
Go, Marty. Has she ever considered a career in politics?
I think she is now. I think she is, yeah.
Does what?
But only if she gets a limo, because I tell you what, she was as foot sore as me.
Oh, hey, you want to talk about foot sore? My Social Security disability hearing was today, which meant I had to go down to Portland. And then I had, once I got the MAX train in Portland, then I had to arrange to walk to the federal building where it was held. I came home and started gulping pain pills. I ain't ever going to do that again. They can come to me if they want to have another hearing. Or I'll do without. Poor hubby's oxygen ran out, the whole nine yards, and it was just now worth it.
There's a whole lot of America left to fix. More America to fix than America that doesn't need fixing.
I kind of wonder if they figured, well, maybe they'll drop dead of a coronary on the way home and then we won't have to pay them.
I hope not. So this was an administrative hearing?
Yeah. It's only taken 3 years to get it. Social Security is fun that way. If you're not, if you don't have an amputation or are blind or are in a wheelchair, their automatic answer is no. Go away. That's their sole function, is to make you go away. Which is why when I decided to apply for this, I did bother with any of this hoorah of trying it myself. I just went ahead and hired a lawyer and said, you do it.
Yeah, and that was wise. That was definitely wise to do, Susan.
Yeah.
Because it is a Byzantine little world, but you've got a far better chance with a lawyer on your side.
Even with a lawyer, it's taken close to 3 years to get a hearing.
Sure, yeah.
Your tax dollars are
all too true. So, but I mean, it was an arduous outcome, but you did get home okay, and you got Donald back to his oxygen and such, right?
Yeah, we won't know the outcome of the hearing for 6 weeks.
Well, you know, one of the things I found out, we likely will not have an administrator for the Office of Surface Mining for about 14 months.
Oh, my word.
So, yeah, things are running a little.
Of course, then again.
But that's not just now. That's how it usually plays out.
Of course, then again, considering the previous Office of Surface Mining holder, you're better off with nobody. Rather than a Bushy.
Well, the political appointees, yes. There's an interim director who keeps the wheels on the rails. But it'll be a while. So if you can imagine, we will be more than a fourth, and possibly on the way to a third of the way into Obama's term.
Yeah, and that gets nasty. That's just that much longer to blow up mountains.
Well, we're working this legislative end with 1310 in the House.
I'm all over Merkley and Wyden. I really was, and I'm going to keep on him.
Jeff Merkley's still getting his office in order. Apparently it takes quite a while to pull a Senate office together, but seems like a real good guy. Senator Wyden's staff are just genial and professional folks.
Yeah, he's been there a while, though. I do know Merkley is no friend to coal.
His primary focus is climate change.
Yeah.
And that's why he is the, I think, second junior most member of the Environment and Public Works Committee. That permanent committee in the Senate.
Goody.
And oddly enough, that's the exact committee that would have jurisdiction over any bill, any companion bill to 1310 introduced in the Senate.
I'm going to have to email him those pictures I dug up of the air pollution from all those coal plants in, headed towards Oregon.
Yeah.
Satellite photos.
Well, you know, that's the thing. They leave Appalachia on a slow boat for China. They go to China. They get burned there, and they come back as toxic smog,
acid rain.
Yeah.
Yep. So, anything along those lines, I will send it to him. I've sent them links. I also sent them a link to the parody, just for grins and giggles. I don't know how it went over, but I figured, well, what the heck, why not?
There you go.
And by the way, I caught your TV show.
Oh, dear.
It's good.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm scared anytime there's a camera in front of me instead of me behind the camera. But I got to tell you, that hour went by in a flash.
It went by as, for me, as a viewer, in a flash. And that's when you know you're doing good.
Well, thank you, Susan. I appreciate it. Susan, have yourself a wonderful evening. We will talk again soon.
Give my love to Burke and Margie and Agnes and all the other kids, and we'll be talking.
Okay, take care, Susan. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
News Ninja Susan calling in from Columbia City, Oregon. And we'll take a little break. I'm just sort of getting used to doing this all again after 4 days away. It's like riding a bicycle. You never forget how, but when you're sort of punchy from lack of sleep, a break is nice once in a while. Let's remember again the trenchant words, this being prayer meeting and all, hallelujah, glory, praise, the trenchant words of the Holy Father. You can't resolve AIDS with the distribution of condoms. On the contrary, it increases the problems. And I guess he means problems in Cameroon and there in Angola. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Trying to sell me your new faith. Tell me why'd you do it. And your hands are clenched and you're talking low with your eyes like flames, your voice like snow. Someone does a fit for you and you fell right into it. Tell me how the universe was meant to be. Take another sip of your cola. You'd be the colonel of the cavalry. We'll go together through the jungle night as the moon out of sight fade out of sight, waiting for the dawn to come here in Angola. And you fling wrong words in a holy war, and you look so big, it seems so short. Don't you ever just want to break right down and stutter? Tell me how the universe was meant to be. Take another sip of your cola. You'd be the colonel of the cavalry. I'll be Francis Ford Coppola. We'll go together through the jungle night till the moon and the stars fade out of sight, waiting for the dawn to come here in Angola.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Let's, do a little bit, little of this, a little of that. I love these opportunities to get out of the hills and hollers and tell other people about what's going on here. You know, it wasn't just lobbying in D.C. we were doing. It wasn't just working the halls of power. It was the... there's a lot of regular folks we talked to as well. It just so happened in the hotel we were staying at there in Chinatown that there was a huge contingent of firefighters. I mean, if you ever want to feel safe in a hotel, be in a hotel full of firefighters. You know they're going to know how to deal with a problem. These weren't just any firefighters, though. These were union firefighters. These were brothers and sisters of the International Association of Firefighters, a member of the AFL-CIO. And we had a chance to talk with them. There was a delegation of them from the state of my birth, Alabama. And, you know, those guys are fighting the hard fight. They're union brothers and sisters, those guys and gals. They're fighting the hardest of fights because they are rock-solid, hardcore union members in the very beating heart of the anti-labor South. And so we did some sharing with them as they waited, as they came back to the hotel. As they came back to the hotel, and we came back, we had a chance to sit around and talk with them. And we told them what's going on here. And they understood. They loved their fishing and their hunting. And they understood that when you kill a mountain, ain't nobody going to fish or hunt on it anymore. And being labor folks, they understood the meaning of activism, and we made some what I thought were really quality we had some really quality moments. Just alerting people who knew absolutely nothing about the issue, and making and activizing them. They were all walking out with "I Love Mountains" bumper stickers. I'm tired. They were all walking out with "I Love Mountains" buttons on their jackets, and they'll take those home, and they'll say, "What's that?" And somebody will say, "What's that about?" And they'll tell, and they'll remember. And across the way, there was a little Japanese sushi bar and a little bar upstairs. We talked to them about it. We talked to the wait staff in the restaurants where we had our meals. We talked to people on the streets. I did Mark Levine's TV show, which I survived. Me, video, terrifying. And then our good friend Lorella Scarborough did Mark's evening, the evening show he does once a month with the local Pacifica station in Washington, D.C. And she was brilliant. And lit up even more people about this issue. So change will come, but realistically, we have to bear in mind that we've got great momentum and great legs going in the House of Representatives. Getting it going in the Senate is a whole different kettle of fish, because the Senate just works differently. So this is that was certainly not the last trip I will make for purposes of advancing this legislation. I will take more trips. And I've sort of taken it on myself as a little personal crusade to go and beat on doors inside the Senate, because it's just harder to get legislation through, because any whack job fiend of coal in that body can make it very difficult for it to go forward. You know, not just Jay Rockefeller, but others. And so it'll take real work. And I spent a good bit of time trying to lay groundwork, as did others, with members of the Senate. And we will find someone who will introduce the companion to H.R. 1310. We'll find someone in that body. And once it's introduced, we'll be able to work, and the folks who work this on a constant basis, people like Stephanie and J.W., folks like Lenny, will work it like mad. I just got a letter in an email from our pal Cindy in Washington State. She sent me a copy of the note that she sent to her senators, both of them, in Washington. It reads as follows. We need a companion bill to the Clean Water Protection Act, H.R. 1310, in the House at this time. I would be so proud if the bill came from our senators here in Washington State. This must happen. We must stop mountaintop removal, where the coal companies throw the tailings into the watershed below. Please get this bill before the Senate ASAP. There is no time to waste. I expect to hear from you on the floor introducing this bill soon. Sincerely yours. And that's our pal Cindy in Washington State. And I got to tell you, I heard this time after time, especially from people who were whose bosses were sympathetic to the idea of the legislation. Don't let up. Build momentum. I visited the offices of some of my favorite senators. And they all said, we need to hear from our constituents that this bill about Appalachia matters to them. Anywhere in the United States, it takes constituents. And that means it takes you, wherever you are. We dropped off the gorgeous, gorgeously produced brochure, or not even brochure, it's like a magazine spread about mountaintop removal. We dropped that off with Kirsten Gillibrand in New York, with her office. It was dropped off with Amy Klobuchar in Minnesota. It was dropped off with Debbie Stabenow in Michigan. It was dropped off with Russ Feingold in Wisconsin. We had a meeting with his staffer. There was a meeting with Herb Cole's staffer in from Wisconsin. There were meetings. The packets dropped off, you know, because sometimes you can't set up a meeting. That'll come later after they've had a chance to look at the packet. Set up with Sheldon Whitehouse in Rhode Island, people with Bernie Sanders in Vermont, and extended conversations had with many of these people. And now what we need is external pressure. Not nasty pressure, just pressure like Cindy's letter here. Talk it among your friends. Talk it among your neighbors. Because, as Susan noted a few minutes ago, even if you're nowhere near Appalachia, it'll come back to you. What is said all the time on this program, we are all downstream. What you can do at home is every bit as important as anything anybody did in the last few days. You can operate as a constituent, as someone with a real voice. Email. They say also again and again that they really love to get those handwritten letters from home. So maybe use a few stamps up. Because it's one, and truthfully, it's 15 seconds to make a phone call. Maybe it's a minute to send an email. But if you sit down and you write a letter and you address it and you lick the envelope and you moisten it somehow and you put a stamp on it, that means you've made a real investment of time. And even though the mails into D.C. are very, very slow after the still unsolved anthrax attacks, once it gets to them, they know you're serious, and they will write you back, which means it will go on somebody's database in somebody's system. Persistence is everything. And I don't limit this effort to Democrats, because there will have to be some Republicans involved. Under the best of circumstances, we have 59 Democrats. We have 58 once you take John D. Rockefeller IV out of the equation. There are others as well that will be out of the equation. It will take Republicans. Folks listening in Maine, Olympia Snow, Susan Collins, you got to work on them. In Nebraska, it's going to take work to bring somebody like a Democrat, allegedly, Ben Nelson, around. It's going to take a lot of work. And that work has to begin, you know, day before yesterday, which it did. So just a few thoughts. We need a companion bill to H.R. 1310, the Clean Water Protection Act. All right? Can you do that? To be part of making this happen, that's one of those worth it to get out of bed in the morning moments, if you know what I mean. So, if you're so inclined, it's a great way to be able to help. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Well, hey, Juanita.
Welcome back.
Well, thank you.
I heard your interview by Mark Levine.
Mm-hmm.
That was excellent. I listened to it a couple, two or three times.
Oh, wow.
And also the one by the, is it Scarborough lady? The lady?
Lorella Scarborough.
Yeah, okay. And those were really great. And isn't he also on a radio station also?
Well, that's what you heard, is his interview with Lorella Scarborough on the Pacifica station in Washington, D.C., where he appears once a month.
I think that's a good way to spread the word. It was excellent. You know.
Mm-hmm.
I learned more from it, too, about the... I didn't know you couldn't build anything on it, either.
Oh, no, it's dead ground.
Yeah, that makes sense, too, that it would shift around.
Well, if you try to build anything on it, yeah, it shifts and it slumps and it doesn't do it uniformly, and it wasted money, wasted effort.
If you don't mind, I'd like to tell you a little something that happened to me the day before yesterday. It's really a change of subject.
Oh, that's okay.
About,
yeah, you know how
nature.
You know how it works.
Huh?
You know how it works around here. There is no such thing as a change of subject.
Have you ever seen a buzzard with their prey?
A buzzard?
Uh huh.
I thought they only preyed on dead things.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I've seen a buzzard. Yeah.
Well, I live like in a rural suburb. I guess that's what you call it. It's, you know, but anyway, the lot across the street from me is empty, and I went out to get some clothes off the line, and I looked out and I saw all these buzzards. What's the other name for them, too? I forgot. And they were eating on something, and I couldn't tell what it was. And I have some cats, and they don't like to stay home very often. And I thought, well, I hope they didn't get one of my cats. Well, I got as close to it as I could, and they were taking, like, the body and just pulling it and pulling it and pulling it. It was going around and around and around, all wrapped around. And anyway, I thought, well, no, that's too big to be one of my cats. And then I got to saying, well, maybe it's a dog. So then I got to thinking, wow, this would be a good something to take a picture of. And I haven't been very good on handling my camera, but I actually did get a few pictures. But if I'd have took a picture, the whole thing would have been amazing. They got out there, too, one time and spread their wings, hovering around that. And so after a while, they kind of, just a few of them were out there, and I got closer. I wanted to see what it was they had. And they finally left, you know, and, of course, they were watching me, and I thought, I hope they don't attack me. But anyway, I got up close to it, and it was a deer. And the head was intact. They'd eaten the eyes out.
Oh, they always do that first.
But they left the head intact.
There's not a lot there.
There's no brains?
Well, they can't hardly get through. It's tough to get through the skull.
Oh, that's why. Well, anyway, me and my son, we got it together and got it, you know, away. You know, I just hate to see something like that not be, have some kind of a... in consideration, instead of being just left out there. It was dead as a doornail for sure. But my neighbor has a lot of different kind of pets. They've got two huge pigs, and they have different kind of pets. And I thought, well, I hope they didn't have a deer for a pet. And I went out there and talked to her. But she didn't, but she said somebody must have been hunting and threw it out there for some way. But the reason I wanted to, it was exciting to watch, you know, because this is something I wanted to say about, I've been kind of in good humor talking about how I'd like to have my funeral, and a couple of years ago I saw this thing, I saw the tail end of how the Tibetans did their funerals,
mm-hmm.
And they take them, and all I saw was where they had the bodies in the ditch, and they would all get together and wait for the buzzards to come. And I thought, that would be great, you know, because I don't want to be cremated. There's been too many bodies left half cremated or not at all, especially here in Florida. And I just don't like the idea of it. But, you know, think about it. That's nature. That's natural. But then I saw it again, and I found out that they have to cut it up and put oil on it and all that kind of stuff, cut up the body. So I thought, no, I don't like that. But then I heard about the one I think is perfect, the Zoroastrians. Do you know their burial thing?
I figured being worshippers of the divine flame that involved burning somehow.
The divine what?
Flame.
No, they don't burn them.
No?
No. Actually, in, you know, where it originated, they have, like, the temples for that. And they take of the bodies, and the men and women are separated. You know, the men do the men and the women do the women. And they put them up in a high tower that's all open, and then the birds can come in and eat the bodies, and they're undisturbed. And then their bones are buried.
Well, that's reasonable.
And I thought that was great. And then I heard that also if they don't have something like that, they take them to a high mountaintop so that the birds can get to them. I just think that's pretty good.
It certainly is a natural way of approaching
the problem. Yeah, a natural way. I mean, a lot of people think cremation is, you know, because you don't know whose ashes you've got. And... You know,
well,
and like I said, there's been too much of the other stuff.
Yeah.
I guess it's a crazy subject, but I just thought I find it fascinating. I've had people laugh at me. I told them I used to tell them I wanted a Tibetan funeral. Now I want a Zoroastrian.
One of the first, anthropologically and archaeologically speaking, one of the first cues that ancient human-type people had become human, Juanita?
Mm-hmm.
Was the discovery that they did something with their dead.
Yeah.
In other words, they didn't just leave it there like that deer you found. That they tried to do something to reverence, deal with, whatever, respect.
Right,
and
right.
And safely do away with a dead body.
Yeah.
And so, no, it's not a crazy topic at all. It's fundamental to the question of humanity.
Mhm. Because I can't help but think a lot about some of those bodies. I mean, it's tradition in my family, you know, they're buried in the grave. But before there was embalming, you know, they were pretty much put in a wooden box and buried. In fact, I kind of think that's okay. That's what the Jewish people do. They don't have a fancy grave.
Muslims too. You got to get them in the ground within 24 hours.
Yeah, but it's very simplistic. It's not anything. If you watch that funeral, I think it was Begin, the one that got assassinated.
No, that wasn't Begin.
I watched his funeral.
That wasn't Begin. That was.
Who was it? It was
Shimon Peres. No.
No, he's still living. I think.
Rabin.
Rabin, I think. Yeah. He was assassinated because he was trying to foster peace, you know. And anyway, they showed the burial. I mean, Clinton was president then, and he went over to the burial, and I kept thinking that little beanie is going to fall off his head. I know it's not called beanie.
No, it's a yarmulke, but yeah, I know what you're saying. Skull cap, there you go.
Anyway, he was buried in a very simple thing, you know, simple wooden box to me. And, you know, nothing big deal, no big deal. Like, you know, we do some people do over here. Some people are obsessed with having the best and the biggest. And I think
that too goes with the nature of being human and our nature toward some strong person taking precedence over the weak. Here, you know, I want a big thing to mark where I am after I'm gone. And pyramid. I want a big thing to mark where I'm gone to. Pyramid.
Yeah, that's true. I had one cousin that had moved out to California, and he died of throat cancer. And his wife, he was cremated. And his wife didn't want to have any kind of services, but his sister here did. And so she sent half of his ashes over here, and we went. That's the first time I've ever went to anything like that. They had a really great ceremony. And then she went out. There was a boat where he loved to fish, and they used to have a pavilion where they danced. You know, it was a really sentimental thing. So his ashes were thrown into that lake. And anyway, it was heavy. The thing was heavy, and it was just half of it.
Well, that's because when someone is technically cremated in this country, Juanita, bones don't burn. That's why they're bones. So
yeah.
Instead of being burnt, the bones that are left over are put through a grinder.
Oh, my God.
And mixed in with the ashes. And so they still have the same weight that bone has. They're just ground up bone.
But, you know, when you see on TV, it's like it's just a little bit sometime when they have it, like they're supposed to be throwing somebody's ashes out. But his was, I mean, just half of them was, you know. Oh, what a subject. But I was so fascinated by those birds. I'd never seen that. And I thought, God, I wish I could have operated that. Got it on film. It would have been great on YouTube because they were flying, and some of them were up in the air, and some of them were doing, they were just doing all kinds. That was a slew of them.
And they're very efficient at what they do. And so,
you know, we have them around here all the time, but I've never seen them all together.
No, you can. Yeah, you can always tell. You can always tell when something's gone down here in the hills because there'll be a flock of buzzards flying over and working their way in.
But I think birds are fascinating. I think all animals are fascinating that I know. You know,
mm-hmm.
I love animals, but even those birds. You know, people say, "Oh, that's terrible," but they're doing. Well, they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, try getting along without them for a while.
Right. They're bottom, what are they called, bottom feeders? Is that right?
Well, they are, I'm too tired to remember the word. They are carrion fowl.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But anyway, I heard some of your talking. I had some company and I didn't hear everything, but I heard your first part of the program, you know, telling about, I thought that was so beautiful of your daughter. You tell her I'm so proud of her.
Well, I sure will. A lot of people have told her that too. So,
yeah, that was excellent. That was really wonderful. Boy, if that don't make somebody think, they never are going to think, are they?
No, you're right. You're right, and maybe that's why senators have staffers, so they don't have to hear it. There's a layer of insulation, so that frankly, Senator Jay Rockefeller lives in a part of West Virginia where they don't blow up mountains, and they won't blow up mountains because it's where Senator Rockefeller lives.
Yeah,
only poor folks. Only folks who have been on their land for nine generations, whose families settled the region in the 1700s. Those are the people who get their homes blown up, Juanita.
Yeah, you know, and I think what you brought out about that y'all are being bombed all the time, because, you know, you stop and think about it. How would you know if you were really being attacked by a foreign country? With all that going on, you wouldn't know the difference.
Exactly. So it is bombing. I mean, it's the same thing. The same thing that.
I think that's a good way to express it. I really do.
Sure, it's terror.
I didn't understand before about another thing I learned from your program was about the difference between something poisonous and something that's a filler.
That's the craziness that the Bush administration
poisoned
on.
I know they've done something different. And didn't they also change the 100-yard rule?
100-foot, that was the last-minute lovely parting gift that the Bush administration handed to the mining coal extraction companies. As lovely parting gifts go, I suppose that's better than a year's supply of Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco treat.
Okay.
All right.
I'll let you go, and Godspeed and everything, and proud of you, youngins, and your son doing okay?
Yeah, he's coming along quite nicely. Especially Agnes.
Email, I don't know if you knew. I have problems with his website, and so I sent an email, but.
Okay, well, I'll try to find it. I have been.
It was from way back then.
I have been severely unplugged. No. I saw your well wishes, and I showed them to him. Yes, and thank you.
Yeah.
Now the biggest job now that he's feeling better, the biggest job is to keep him from trying to go back to his usual, flat out, full on 125% operational mode. When he feels good, but he's not fully healed, so
can't lift
anything, that kind of stuff, and trying to keep him from lifting things is or running or banging into stuff. Yeah, there's the chore.
I used to like those gongs too. I never did get to crash any gongs.
Oh yeah. He was smacking the daylights out of them too.
We used to have, when I was in school years ago, when I was in the first grade, we had a little band that you played triangles and bells. And I was just thrilled to death. I thought that was so great.
Hey, percussion section's important. Juanita, have yourself a wonderful evening. We'll talk soon. Take care now.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Our view correspondent, Juanita, calling from Central Florida. And it's about 19 minutes before the hour. We're a little over halfway done with the program. And I just, like I said, just little dashes and dabs and bits and pieces of information where I was just practically completely out of the email loop because, I've got one of those little tiny keyboards on my phone that I haven't learned and gotten to where I can type with it with any kind of competency. So I have not been ignoring folks over these last several days. It's just more of a matter of being away from it and coming back to the room being so confounded dog tired. Well, I fell asleep in the bathtub last night and woke up when the water passed my lips and started getting near my nose. Yeah, passed out, fell asleep, whatever. No, it's not like passed out, that kind of passed out. But the water handle was like, and that's how tiring it was. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Hey, Al, how's it going?
Pretty good. I'm up here in an area close to West Virginia. I'm in Maryland, Grantsville, Maryland.
I know where Grantsville is, sure.
Yeah, a little town. Yeah, I think I've noticed mountaintop removal up this way.
Nah, I don't know. I don't think so. It's mainly limited to southern West Virginia, the south, the very western tip of Virginia, eastern Kentucky, and eastern Tennessee.
Okay.
And other states have responded to it. The state of North Carolina, for instance, passed a law. If I understand that law correctly, Alan. In the state of North Carolina, it's illegal to burn any coal that comes from a mountaintop removal job. It's under that kind of legislation is underway in other states as well.
Oh, that sounds good.
And that there are so many brilliant ways to make this stop, and that's a dandy. Just take away the daggum market for it, and then maybe make it illegal to ship it overseas. Then you effectively can't sell it.
Uh-huh. And then make it illegal to get coal from South America, because I hear they're making a mess in Colombia.
Colombia is a nightmare where coal is concerned. Well, Colombia is a nightmare where a lot of labor issues are concerned, whether it's a banana plantation, a Coca-Cola plant, or a coal mine complex. Because in all three of those instances, when somebody tries to organize and form a union, the company usually hires somebody to take those people out behind a building somewhere and put a bullet behind their ear.
Yeah, like that company in Alabama. I can't think of the name of it right offhand.
Drummond. It's never far from my tongue.
And one company in Alabama was responsible. I read in the paper one time that they were wanting to build like a 10,000 acre strip mine. I don't know if they ever did or not. I hope not. In South America, in Colombia. So I guess they're talking about Drummond.
Drummond is or was somehow associated with those Colombian operations. You remember the lawsuit that took place. It didn't go any. It didn't. It wasn't a winner, but it did happen.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Hey, did you get to talk to any Alabama representatives or senators?
No, but I've laid the groundwork for going and trying to have conversations with folks in Arthur Davis's and Parker Griffith's offices.
Yeah, Arthur Davis, he sounded like a good fella. I called my representative a few days ago, Bacchus, Spencer Bacchus.
Yes.
And they were nice to me, but he's pretty right-wing, but maybe I did some good, I hope.
Well, you know, it did more good than not doing anything at all. And it's, yeah. it's little acts, Alan, all the way through this. Little acts of little small acts of tremendous heart.
Yeah.
And that's where this all comes from. That's how we succeed. That's how we win.
Yeah, and also you said persistence also.
Yeah, once is not enough. You got to keep after them.
Mm-hmm. Which is not hard for me because I've been told that I have OCD.
Well, that comes in handy with something like this. But, you know, always be polite, always be respectful, especially where staff is concerned. I was in an office yesterday, and I watched a lovely young lady who was answering the phones. And I watched her pick up a call, and I heard her say after a while, "Sir, I am listening to what you're saying." And you know how it is when somebody's screaming on the phone and you can't tell what's being said, but you can hear from across a room that somebody's screaming in a phone?
Uh-huh.
This lovely young lady was being screamed at. And I don't know what issue was being called on. But you know what? Eventually, she had no choice but to just set the phone down. No matter how irritated we might become with a legislator's positions, those are folks answering the phones who aren't the elected representative. And I'm not saying this directed at you. This is just a general observation. But I'm enough of an old Southern boy that anybody that makes a woman cry has immediately earned my reproach. And it was just sad to behold. And I would guess that more of those come from right wing than left wing, because those people are thugs and they are cruel. And some of them enjoy getting a response like that. But always, you know, always with these, we must remember that we will that we will win more. We will catch more with honey than we will with vinegar.
I called my senators about that union proposal to help the unions.
Yeah, the Employee Free Choice Act.
Yeah, and I think somebody from Richard Shelby's office tried to tell me that they do have a choice now. And I told her that she said that they do have a closed-in ballot now or something.
Secret ballot. They've got the secret ballot.
I told her that with this Employee Free Choice Act, that they have a choice of either having a secret ballot or some other way. And then
by merely checking off a box and card check agreements that those are what those are called, card check agreements. Those are de rigueur in some parts of the country, and they are completely legal within the National Labor Relations Act as it now stands. However, card check agreements can only be used if the employer, not the employees, if the employer consents to them. So all the Employee Free Choice Act does is give the employees the same right that the employer has to opt for a card check. Now, I don't know why equality is somehow a dirt. Well, I do know. But, you know, it's merely a matter of equality becoming the standard within the National Labor Relations Act, as opposed to the inequality which exists now. Pretty simple, huh?
Yeah. So what exactly is a card check now?
Well, union cards go around, and you sign up, and you check a little box that says, I want to be in the union.
And that's all in those?
And if there's if a majority of workers vote that way, you got a union.
Yeah.
Whereas in order to do that now under the National Labor Relations Act, you have to have the mother may I from the employer to do that. Otherwise, you have to go through a secret ballot process, and there's this long organizing campaign during which time the employer brings workers into a room that they can't leave and sits there and tells them, you know, you'll be a communist if you join the union. You know, your mother won't love you anymore if you join the union. And you'll probably go to hell because you won't be a Christian anymore if you join a union. You know, just outright dirty, filthy, rotten, stinking lies.
I think I read that in the Employee Free Choice Act, that if an employee fires somebody who tries to get a union going, that they would be fined, I think, $10,000 or something, the corporation will. I hope that's true.
Well, there are fines for, there are serious teeth put into the bill, yes. I'm not sure exactly how it relates, but, stiff fines per day, per week, for violations of the act. And those, you know, those aren't there because anybody wants to put any businesses out of business. It's there because businesses have a history of behaving reprehensibly when their workers try to organize.
Well, I don't know all the details about the bill when I called my senator. But I just told her, I said, under the last 8 years or so, the middle class in this country is just really shot. I mean, we really lost it pretty bad. But
to be honest, Alan, the middle class has been under full on assault since January the 20th, 1981.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Because that's the day that St. Ronnie Reagan entered office. Remember, there were two initial acts that he did the minute he became president. One of them was to order the solar panels taken off the White House roof. And the other was to make sure that waiters and waitresses and bartenders and so forth, tips were taxed.
Oh, wow. And then Patco, I remember that.
Well, yeah, that came along a little bit later, not much later, but yeah, that was another the just nasty piece of business. And, you know, typical just another day at the office sort of stuff, union busting, where Republicans are concerned.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I was listening to Mark's show yesterday,
mm-hmm.
And this caller called in. This man called in from West Virginia.
Yeah, McDowell County.
Yeah, I can't remember the guy's name, but he sounded like he really knew what he was talking about. But he had the West Virginia dialect. I really liked him.
I heard about that call, and apparently, and I haven't heard the call itself yet, but apparently he laid it out straight and flat.
And he seemed like he knew what he was talking about. I'd like to hear him call your show a few times.
Yeah, it would be kind of cool. I guess they stream that program online so it can be gotten anywhere in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, too bad that not more people don't have internet so it could get you. That's one thing that Republicans want to keep us away from, I bet you. Because they don't want anything to educate the people.
Well, that's like when I go, you might find this interesting or ironic, Alan. Whenever I go down into the Coal River Valley, I just turn the cell phone off because it doesn't work down there. There's no service. On the other hand, if we build the Coal River Wind Project, it is a fact that cell phone relays can be put on the wind turbine towers. And rural areas, for instance, could maybe start getting wireless internet broadband.
Yeah, like I use.
Exactly, and that would be of inestimable value. But no. The big money, they want to blow that mountain up. I see a mountain. Well, let's blow it up. But there are so many other issues that are attendant upon all of this that are, and they're brilliant things, that are going on. There is a sludge injection bill, that's trying to make its way through the legislature of West Virginia right now that speaks to the poisoning of entire communities with injected sludge into, old abandoned mines and, that gets into the groundwater and poisons people like it has on, Printer Holler. That's coming. There's a cemetery bill that's in the West Virginia legislature right now because we have lost untold ancient graves to mountaintop removal. Because they just run right over the dead. Where King Cole is concerned, now is what matters. Not the ancient and revered remains of our forebears. No, the mountaintop removal companies, Alan, I kid you not, have shoved entire multi-hundred-year-old cemeteries over into valley fills.
That can be bad karma, you know that?
You ain't saying, you're saying about the, no kidding. Well, let me tell you another one I just found out, just blew my mind. You know that West Virginia has a long and tragic history of mine disasters, right?
Yeah.
Mine explosions. I mean, we all know about Sago a few years ago, but there was, Farmington, back in the late 60s that killed hundreds. There was the Monongah disaster up in northern West Virginia at the turn of the 20th century that killed hundreds. Well, in Raleigh County, West Virginia, back in the early 1900s, there was the Eccles, E-C-C-L-E-S, Eccles mine disaster. And well in excess of 100 people were killed in that. And as is so often the case with mine explosions, they didn't get all the bodies out. Some bodies were never accounted for.
So that was like a grave itself.
It is a grave. It is a grave. The mine itself is a grave. Well,
so I guess you're going to tell me now that the strip miners want to strip that.
No, it's actually worse. Now, I'm going to tell you now, Alan, that the International Coal Group, the same people who brought us the Sago disaster, have decided to go back in and mine another seam of coal underground in that same location. And they're hauling the coal out, and they're prepping it. And by prepping, I mean using fresh water and turning it into poison water, sludge, slurry. And when they're done with that water, you know, it can never be purified. It can never be cleaned again. It just has to be pumped away somewhere. Well, the International Coal Group at Eccles, West Virginia, is pumping their coal sludge into the mine that is the grave of miners killed in the Eccles explosion. Coal blew them up, coal took their lives, and now they are going to turn their last resting place into a watery, toxic, toxin-filled reservoir underground. Now you brought up the phrase bad karma. You want to run that one up the bad karma flagpole, Alan? Is that pretty? That's disgusting, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the word I was about to use. Disgusting.
But it's okay in West Virginia, because coal is king.
And people love money. Hey, last talk to you. Remember we talked about the CIA?
Yes.
You remember that?
Yes.
Well, I was reading a little bit on the internet, and it sounds, the way I understand it, the company AIG, a lot of those employees in AIG are CIA agents in the past.
Wouldn't surprise me a dime's worth.
And I think that even the company was started by the CIA before it was a CIA. It was something else. It was O something. You mentioned that word last time.
OSS.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of CIA agents in IBM also. So I guess the CIA is nothing but a front for corporations like we're talking about. And they steal our taxes in different ways.
Yeah. And it turns out, I just saw this breaking story. and it's kind of heartbreaking. It turns out that the person who put in the language that makes sure that made it possible for those bonuses to get paid, Senator Chris Dodd from Connecticut, chairman of the Banking Committee. That was one of those where you read it and your stomach just goes, sickening. But it's not one. It's something he did because the administration told them that it had to be there or the bailout wouldn't work. And by administration, I mean, you know, the past administration. You know, the little jug-eared, pig-eyed lout, Crawford boy, Bush. Hey, wow, that's really cool. I forgot that man's name for a little bit.
Well, the bailout's not working anyway. It turned out to be just a big joke.
Well, it depends on who you ask. Bailout's working real good for the folks at AIG.
Yeah.
It's working real good for the people who were on that conference call that bailout money was used to finance so that companies could talk about the best way to beat back the Employee Free Choice Act. You know, it's working. The bailout's working real good for the banks that finance mountaintop removal. That means it's, the bailout's working. The bailout's working great for Massey Energy.
Well,
it's just not working so good for us.
Yeah, the woman I talked to at Senator Shelby's office, she told me that Senator Shelby did not vote for the bank bailout, and that's good for him. Glad he didn't.
He got it right for all. Basically, what it boils down to, he got it right for all the wrong reasons.
I thought I thought he was a good guy. He was a Democrat years ago when he switched over. Jeff Sessions, I guess you forget about him.
Yeah, because Jeff Sessions is kind of, you know, dead from the neck up.
Yeah. Hey, you've been to Birmingham a few times, and you noticed that big mountain that they have, the big iron.
Yeah, the Vulcan. Sure.
Yeah. Well, that mountain, I used to live up there on the side of that mountain, kind of like on the suburbs when I was a teenager growing up. And I used
What is that? Red Mountain?
Yeah, that's what it's called, Red Mountain. And if you look at a topographical map, the Appalachian Mountain Trail just goes right down through Birmingham, and that's what that is. It's the end of that.
That's an Appalachian Mountain, exactly.
Yeah, and I just used to enjoy just walking along the top of that mountain and looking down to the valley and seeing the airport and stuff. And they made a park out of there to go hiking called Red Mountain Nature Center.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Ruffner Mountain Nature Center. And that's one of the reasons why I like mountains so much, because of my memories of hiking as a teenager. But everybody likes mountains, too. We can't do without them.
And, you know, that mountain chain extends, let's see, what is it in Huntsville? Is that Montesano Mountain? That's still the Appalachian Mountains.
Yeah, northeast Alabama has a lot of nice mountains, too, as part of that trip.
That's one of them, exactly.
Oh, yeah, that's a beautiful place to go.
And I guess there's even a couple of counties in Mississippi that are included in the Appalachian Regional Commission, because that's where the last of the Appalachians finally just peter out down to nothing.
Uh-huh.
So from essentially up in Canada to the northeast corner of Mississippi, that's the Appalachians. Some of us are unfortunate enough to live in the Appalachians that have coal under them, and that's where the trouble comes from.
Uh-huh. Hey, I pulled out a coin out of my pocket the other day, and it was a coin from West Virginia.
Oh, was it the West Virginia Quarter?
Yeah, it had the mountains and a big bridge on it.
Yeah, that's the New River Gorge Bridge. You've driven across that, haven't you?
Yeah, it's on 64, isn't it? I-64?
No, that's US 19.
Oh, yes. I probably haven't, because I used to do a dedicated route, and I only just took certain routes.
Okay, well, that's about 6 miles from here, that bridge. And so that mountain that's in the background on the state quarter there, back behind the bridge as you're looking at it. Yeah, that's the one they're blowing up here.
Oh, you're kidding.
No.
I mean, the mountain that you brag about on your coin, you're gonna blow up.
No, not gonna. Been blowing up.
Oh, no.
Is blown up. They've left a little thin line of trees there to make sure that you can't see the desolation behind it. It's a fraud.
Oh.
The state quarter is basically a fraud now.
This seems like too unreal to be true. It's unbelievable. You brag, and then the state brags about something on the quarter, and then they tear it up, destroy it.
Yeah, exactly.
I hope the rest of the nation wakes up.
Well, we're trying to wake them up. You're part of it. You're doing the work, Alan. You're part of it.
Uh-huh.
You're waking folks up. You're talking about it with folks when you're on the street, in line at the store, whatever. You're part of it.
Yeah, I want to do all I can too.
And you are. And I appreciate it.
All right.
Alan.
Nice talking to you.
All right, you take care.
All right, have a good day.
Bye now.
Bye.
Love hearing from Alan. He's on the road in Grantsville, Maryland this evening. Maryland. So we're at the top of the third hour, a couple of minutes into the third hour. And probably take just a wee bit of a break. Your thoughts, of course, are always welcome. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your own nickel or your own unlimited long-distance dialing plan, you can save us a nickel or a buck at 304-658-3333. I certainly want to keep the conversation going any way you slice it. And, of course, last night was also St. Patrick's Day, by the way. And it was downright charming because walking back to our hotel, you want irony? Here's irony. We were in a hotel in Chinatown that had an Irish pub in it. And I think the first night we were there, it not only had an Irish pub in it, it had a bunch of Irish guys in the Irish pub in the hotel in Chinatown. It was great. It really was. It was a wonderful place to be, and it was a rousing, rocking first floor of that hotel that particular evening. But you know, everybody who showed up was doing heroic work. But what Alan talks about is so very important because he's doing that heroic work too. You're all doing heroic work. Far, far away from Appalachia, may never set eyes on Appalachia, but you know how important it is. And you're writing and you're calling and you're faxing. You're telling others. You are creating the momentum that we felt when we were there. When we would look at someone from far, far away from Appalachia and they'd go, I know what's happening. I know. Now help me be able to look at my boss and say, hey, your constituents want this. You're doing it. Cindy's doing it in Washington State with letters to her senators there. Susan and Jean and many others are doing it in Oregon with their letters, their phone calls. It's happening in Massachusetts. It's happening in Maine. It's happening on the Great Plains where a bump in the ground is as close as they'll get to a mountain. It's happening in Colorado where they look at mountains of a distinctly different sort and still care enough to build the groundswell of support that will save these mountains, what's left, and save everyone who's downstream from them. And for that, I thank you, and we thank you. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Shem alek ma yelama, shem ahezah yelama, son ashen evor asfer, hakuig gen ma yelama. Shem alek ma yelama, shem
Cunningham. Does the Employee Free Choice Act go far enough? One labor activist doesn't think so. Jesse Russell reports.
The Employee Free Choice Act is intended to give workers more rights in the workplace when it comes to choosing representation. Bill Fletcher, author of the book Solidarity Divided, doesn't think the act goes far enough to protecting those rights.
The legislation should have been focused less on the issue of card check and voting, and more on completely eliminating the employer from any role at all in the worker's right to choose a union.
Fletcher says employees are constantly under pressure from their employer.
Workers and workplaces around this country are always have that third eye open. And that third eye is watching the employer to see what the signals are. So if the employer even hints that someone may be terminated, even hints that something might be shut down, or even hints that they don't happen to like the idea of a union, that can have an impact because of how hierarchical our society is and the way that people look at issues of power.
Bringing the Olympics to Chicago would be a huge boost to employment and would inject major money into the local economy. Chicago Federation of Labor President Dennis Gannon says the whole Chicagoland community would benefit.
Full employment of our building and construction trades, numerous job opportunities for our transportation folks and our logistics folks, folks in the hospitality industry, the security industry. I think there's an enormous opportunity for us to grow a workforce here in Chicago to do the jobs that are going to be coming with the Olympic Games if we're able to secure them to the city of Chicago.
All the work necessary in the years before the Olympic event would clearly have a positive impact, but Gannon says the Olympics could also leave a lasting mark on the city.
The change we're going to see take place just on our lakefront alone and the different type of venues that will be here for the residents of the city of Chicago to utilize once the Olympic Games are gone. The transportation needs, the roads, the infrastructure that will be put in place for the Olympic Games will be utilized for the citizens of the city and the state of Illinois for many years after the Games are gone.
The Olympic Committee will visit Chicago in April. Gannon says it looks like the effort to attract the Olympics is on track with business, political leadership, and labor working together to make it happen.
Here is today's economic report. According to one group, when it comes to economic competitiveness, Utah ranks number one out of all 50 states. In an index created by the American Legislative Exchange Council, Colorado, Arizona, Virginia, and South Dakota all join their fellow western state in the top five. At the bottom are the northeastern states of New Jersey, Maine, Rhode Island, Vermont, and New York. Utah closed a $1 billion budget gap without raising taxes.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
All righty, and I've spent a lot of time this evening talking about the D.C. experience, and there will be more to talk about. And I hope you get some sense of just how energizing this is. I'm going back. I'm going back. I'm not going to stop on this. I'm not going to rest on this. I saw the courage that my daughters displayed. I saw the courage displayed by around 150 people from around the country and around Appalachia. How can I not go back? I don't know how much I do, but I know I have to do something. And I will. Of course, it wouldn't be D.C. if, like the Bible says, and it is prayer meeting night after all, so we can go here. Like it says in the New Testament, the poor ye have always with you. I passed out a bunch of bucks. Not a bunch of bucks, but dollar here, dollar there. I'm a soft touch. You know, if they get you young enough in the basement of the Baptist church. No, not that way. Now stop it. If they get you young enough in the basement of the Baptist church, those little old blue-haired ladies can affect you for a lifetime. And I happen to be in the charge of a little old blue-haired lady who was mighty fond of that verse in, I think, Matthew. I was hungry and you fed me not. I was naked and you clothed me not. I was in prison and you didn't visit me. And I say to you that if ye have done it unto the least of these, you've done it also unto me. So you know me. A guy walks past me and says, "Hey man, spare a dollar for the homeless?" Yeah, I can spare a dollar for the homeless. I think I spared a dollar for the homeless for every person who asked and a few people who asked me more than once. And I kind of wish I could, you know, that. No, I don't wish. I won't wish. I can just wonder, maybe if you live in a city, you just get used to it and you're able to tune them out just like the sound of the traffic. but I'm weird that way. Because I heard, can you spare a dollar for the homeless? And I mean, it's like some sort of, you know, because when you're a kid, it sticks. And I saw that little old blue-haired lady long gone to her reward. My hand went into my pocket. This is not about me talking about what a great guy I am. I'm not. I saw a man who was, well, he was an African-American man, but he had been horribly, horribly burned in his face. He was literally burned white. And that got me thinking. There's a man of dark complexion, and he gets horribly burned and turns white in places. White guy gets horribly burned and stays the same color he is. There's a philosophical query. There's an existential question in there somewhere. The end result of disaster is to turn white. Kind of turns that whole Old Testament thing about, you know, God turning a man black for, I don't know, whatever, you know, crazy, crazy foolishness early in the Old Testament. As a sign, or so the world would recognize him, yada, 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 the sons of Ham or some stupidity like that. But it turns out, if you're dark-skinned and you are horribly maimed by fire, you turn white. What a comment. What a comment. What an impression. But no, that little old blue-haired lady was with me every time I saw a homeless person. Some would call them bums. Some would call them panhandlers. But you know what? They live a life. They manage to survive a life that would kill most of us. I don't know how many of us, and Lord knows how many of our so-called betters, you know, our AIG friends, could stand a week, a night of what these individuals exist day after day after day. And they've learned over time, these homeless people, these people that our culture has pushed into the margins of what passes for civilization, they learn and they network. I was never once, I kid you not, I was never once solicited in terms of, can you give me a dollar? Or can you spare some change? Apparently, homeless folks in D.C., or at least the ones I ran across, have been taught that they must refer to themselves in the third person. And that somehow had a third world impact on me. Can you spare a dollar for the homeless? Not, I'm homeless, can you spare a dollar for me? Somewhere along the way, homeless folks have been taught that they must not refer to themselves as individual persons anymore. That it works better if you say, for the homeless. And I don't know how that idea evolved. I don't know how that concept came into being. I don't know if it applies in cities outside D.C. But I found that very interesting. Having been socially and culturally dehumanized to the highest degree in the greatest country on earth, it has to go one step further. as if the shambling gait, as if the desperate eyes, as if the tattered clothing were not blinking neon signs that an individual is homeless. They have to refer to themselves verbally as such. No, we do not have a formal caste system such as exists on the Indian subcontinent. But we have one de facto, just the same. And I probably need help. I probably need counseling or something. Because I kept looking at these individuals, these people, these brothers and sisters of mine on this ride, on this little blue-green time machine marble that's hurtling through the universe. And you know what's weird? After a while, I didn't stop seeing them. I started seeing them differently. And where maybe other people see them differently and are thereby able to ignore them, please understand, I didn't have a pocket full of money. Where others maybe make them invisible via their own psyches. You know what I saw? You know what I saw? I saw children. Because every single human being who solicited me for some spare change, or do you have a dollar? Can you help out the homeless? Every last one of them was a child. Every last one of them was an infant that you or I, if we saw them anywhere, would pick up and take to our hearts and would hold and coo at, cuddle and caress, and wait for that most precious of gifts, the smile of an infant. And I don't suppose it's possible to make that inquiry, but in my heart I wanted to know how people get from point A to point, oh my God. I learn so much when I leave these hollers. I suppose it's a matter of fact that folks in such dire straits couldn't survive here in rural America. Because to be poor in rural America is hard enough. To be homeless in rural America is a death sentence. And I suppose that's why such folk gravitate to cities. Because although there is not much in the way of an infrastructure, there's something to hide behind to stay out of the wind. There's an awning to huddle under to stay out of the rain. And I'm not saying, and I'm not offering any profound observation. I'm just saying that I am changed. Like that argument made by the ancient Greek philosopher that you could never put your finger in the same river twice. That every time you put your finger in the water, it's a different river. Different river. Different river. That every time I go and I look around me, I'm a different person, different person, different person. And maybe somewhere along the way, there's an answer or two. But I'm damned if I've found the answer to how a precious infant in a country where our religion industry swears that we hold the infant sacred above all other things, where coal barons fund multi-million dollar sleazy right-wing court campaigns behind a front group named And For the Sake of the Kids. I'm damned if I can figure out how a precious infant can be so disregarded as to be allowed to grow and suffer into people whose best hope is the jingling change in a hillbilly's pocket. I don't know. I don't know. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Bob.
Brother Luke, how are you?
I tell you what, you found out the thing that I always know about traveling. It makes, one thing is, I've been to places that I've enjoyed, some places I didn't, but it does make you appreciate coming home so much.
The older I get, the more difficult it is to sleep in any but my own bed, Luke.
Well, you know how it is. Us being up in the mountains, there's some places in Northern California. I got some family in that area of the world that I enjoyed there. You know what I mean? It's livable. You know, it's away from the cities and all that, and it's nice. But most of the times, any other place I've ever been, first of all, there ain't no hills, which drives me nuts.
Yep.
Looking off in the distance, and you can see forever, and it's just sort of, that's wrong. But
you know, that very thought occurred to me today as we were driving on I-66 west out of D.C. There's a ridge that you crest where you can see the first line of the Blue Ridge. And I've seen it from the air, and I've seen it in a car, and every time I see it on the way home, I go, you know, it's like relief's insight.
My brother used to live in Texas at the time, and I went down there, and it's like, dang, you can see for 60, 70 miles. It's wrong. It's just wrong.
Yeah, I don't want a horizon I can, you know, walk 8 days at.
Well, you can see a storm that's 100, almost 100 miles away, and it won't come anywhere near you, and it's like, that's just wrong.
Yeah, I know. Well, it might rain in 3 days.
Oh, well, but I'm glad to have you home.
I appreciate it. It is sincerely good to be home.
Now, my question is, I've come up with a theory now. I now know why Fox News hired Glenn Beck.
Okay.
Believe it or not, after you listen to him for a while, O'Reilly almost does look sane.
Well, and I guess it's so goofy now. Did you see that Shepard Smith was making fun of him?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think I sent you one of them, and I said, we're hoping for a civil war here.
Yeah. What did Shepard Smith? We must all worship. I worship. We must all worship Glenn Beck.
Yeah.
And this was in an exchange with Chris Wallace.
Yeah. Oh well, see, Wallace is totally in the Beck camp, but he was just sort of like he apparently has one or two functioning brain cells because he was sitting there going, "What? You know what I mean?"
Well, and I got an email from our buddy David over in the central part of the state there with you, Luke. Beck has gone on another crying jag.
Oh yeah. Oh,
he cries more than Jimmy Swaggart now.
I know. It's getting interesting. I tell you, the one I liked was have you go over to Democratic Underground. Glenn Beck gets two of this week's top ten.
Sent that along. I saw that.
Well, the one I liked was the second one where he listed his nine, was it virtues or nine something or other, and he gave comments behind all of them, and they were all just perfect. It's like, you know, Glenn Beck is like, oh, now we can criticize our government and all this. And the guy said, yeah, unless there's a Republican in, you know. And then, what was the one? One of the first ones is like, you have to be a Christian. To be under one of these nine, and you know if you go over and read them, I can't tell you because I don't have it right in front of me, but like I say, when you read all nine of them, Democratic Underground's gotten their little comment right underneath, and every one of them's right on. I mean, just you know, it's just amazing, you know, just to see the way the wind shifts when there's a Democrat in the White House. It's like say that whiplash will just about tear your head off.
Yep.
But,
and the whole filibuster thing. Have you caught these filibuster comments now?
Oh yeah.
That it's more. What? Let me see if I can get my head around this and say this right. It is GOP senators think it's more important that Democrats and not Republicans be consistent with regard to the filibuster?
Oh, yeah.
Huh? What?
Well, you know, the one I thought was funny this week was you'll see the fun one was some of the comment the Fox News commentators were out there crying about, well, look at all this crazy people are talking about, you know, about the AIG. And they went down the list, about three or four of them, and every one of them, you know, one of them commit suicide, one of them, all four of them were Republicans and made the comments. But the Democrats are losing their minds over it, of course, in the news. You know what I mean? Was it Grassley wanted them to commit suicide, and one of them wanted to get a rope, I think, and a tall tree, you know? And so the Fox News boys are on there going, well, these Democrats, they're losing their minds over this AIG. And somebody on one of the other news channels went down to three or four of them, like, well, four of them were Republicans who made the really crazy comments. You know what I mean?
So, yep.
But the one I liked was, I want somebody to explain to me, now, except that they did apologize. But I want someone to explain to me how you slipped a piece of tape in of Joe Biden from 6 months ago.
Holy cow.
Show.
I saw that 45 minutes before I went on the air, and I didn't have time to devote to it what it deserved. But it was another one of those mouth-hanging-open moments, Luke.
Well, and most people, I'm sure, do know. But, you know, whenever a clip or something like that, there's a little thing called a date.
Yeah. Fox News dummied in six-month-old Joe Biden footage. And
he was running for office.
Yeah, more than 6 months old, and offered it to the public as current.
Yep, and then got caught at it because somebody recognized it.
My
bet is one of those stuff where they figured, well, either we fess up to it or somebody's going to expose it. So they ran out there. Oh, we made a mistake, and it's like, I'm sorry. You know, news people and people in not the news understand it. I mean, they're down at the bottom, we don't see it on our TV, but there's a date and a whole bunch of data that they see at the station that we don't see that's got dates and times and the whole nine yards on it. So when you say you accidentally slipped it in there, no, that didn't accidentally slip in anywhere.
Yeah, that's an official Janet Jackson wardrobe malfunction moment, isn't it?
Oh God, I tell you what, you know, it's just one of the things. It's like, you know, guys, you know, try to come up at least with a reasonable excuse. Say somebody put the wrong tape in the machine, but don't say we, you know, but essentially, like you said, spliced it in. It wasn't like they showed the whole tape. They took it and put it in an argument.
Yeah, that was just posted in the chat room, Luke. You know, not only did they do that, they doctored the clip.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't like they put in a wrong tape, you know, and that could, you know, you said, well, it had the wrong year on it. Well, you know, it was 08, it was 08 to 09 we put it in there.
Well, I got to tell you, Luke, I'm waiting with a little bit of trepidation because my daughters and I were shadowed for a little bit in Washington as we went about our business by a reporter from the Washington Times.
Oh, did you? Oh, if you want to see something, go to, I guess it'd be on YouTube or be at HBO. Go look at this loon that Bill Maher had on his show Friday night. I can't think what his name was. He was on there with Michael Eric Dyson. Oh, it was fun. I thought that they were just, each one of them was going to reach in.
So this was a real live, genuine right wing, one of those?
Oh yeah, I mean he's one of the ones, you know. Bush did nothing wrong. No, you know, everything that's gone wrong has been the Obama. Even when he wasn't president, it was still his fault. You know.
Let me just throw this out there for general consumption. Like I said, I didn't watch a lot of TV, but it seemed like every time I turned it on, and maybe this is why I don't watch a lot here at home. Every time I turned the TV on, something just assaulted my senses. Whether it was O'Reilly and Goldberg calling African American folks Schwarzes, I felt like I was watching television from, you know, 19. You know, it's the Lester Maddox TV network.
Didn't this originally start with Jackie Mason or something?
Yeah, it did. And then he dead?
No, he should be. But I mean, he's he's a real right winger. You know what I mean? He's one of them ones that's like, don't ever, you know, if you ever see he's invited on some places, turn the channel. Don't bother watching it. Cause he's one of those ones that he believes anything that Fox News will tell him. You know, 100%.
Oh yeah. Well, and you know, I've got an older grudge I hold against Jackie Mason. He screwed up the second Caddyshack.
I know.
That thing was awful. But no, I mean, I do hold grudges a long time.
Well,
I see that
was Dennis Quaid. So
yeah, I see this thing and this Schwarze discussion and Goldberg trying to sort of pre-inoculate the thing. Well, you know, the liberals will object to this. Human beings should object to this. And it seemed to be lost on poor Bernie that any time you have a euphemism that you use to substitute as a generality, an impersonal generality for a human being that human being has not consented to, it's a pretty sure sign of bigotry.
Well, the one I sent you today is, you see the one with Lou Dobbs.
Oh, God, yes.
I mean, the thing is, it's like, Lou, do we need to just get you a bed sheet, a pillowcase, and your KKK card?
Lou's, yeah, wait, let's share that with people, Luke. Lou Dobbs is pissed, and you know, St. Patrick's Day, Lou Dobbs is pissed off at the Irish. You know, I mean, why not just wear orange on St. Patrick's Day? Do the setup, Luke.
Well, it's apparently on his radio show, Mr. Dobbs went off on you know, people thought, well, you know, we're it's a quiet week, nothing much happened. Well, Luke, to take off on the Irish. I mean, these aren't people trying to get across the border to Mexico.
Stop. Time out.
Oh, okay.
Lou Dobbs has a radio show on what network?
Well, apparently he does. I mean, the thing I said something about his on a radio show.
I'm looking at it here. It says yesterday on his radio show. I'm getting a little.
CNN has do they have a radio channel, apparently?
Well, I worked for CNN Radio back when I drove my dinosaur to work every day. But it was a news network. It was, this is CNN Radio. And, you know, 5-minute newscast.
It was headline news, what headline news should be back then.
No, well, it started off as the audio to headline news, and then it turned into a real news network, which is when I was there. And, you know, we did newscasts. But surely to God he's not on CNN Radio.
It's probably one of the other one of those fly-by-night groups.
Genesis Radio Network. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he's sharing time with Alex Jones or something.
Probably.
But anyway.
You know, and apparently, like I say, you know, this wasn't one of Lou's regular ones going off against anybody trying to cross the border or anything, you know, which Lou, I'm still convinced one day Lou is going to suggest they use landmines. But
so Lou goes off
on the Irish, for St. Patrick's Day,
and this is the beauty of it, goes off as any right winger does, really stupidly.
Oh,
so let's share. This is too good not to.
Okay.
And by the way, I've got to wish to you each and every one happy St. Patrick's Day. I do that, and I have to be honest with you, despite my fervent anti-ethnic holiday position. That's right. I am against St. Patrick's Day. I'm against St. Columbus Day, St. Joseph's Day, I'm against all of those things. Is there, by the way, is there a Jewish ethnic holiday? Is there one?
Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Hanukkah, Passover, Purim, but, you know, who the heck am I?
Yeah. Let's not interrupt a good rant. You know how it is. It's like, but like I said, this is the man away from a bed sheet, a pillowcase, and a KKK card. You know.
Let's just finish this out real quick.
Oh, okay.
Now, okay, the Jews have disappointed me. I mean, do we have some? Is there a?
Now this is the first time I've heard this audio.
Oh, okay.
Because I only saw it's been a long time. In fact, it was grainy footage involving a man with a Charlie Chaplin mustache the last time I heard anything that came out even in translation, as the Jews have disappointed me. Oh, gracious sakes. This is mind-boggling.
It's like, you got to wonder, do the people from CNN listen to, it's like we used to say, the people at the TV networks listen to their people when they go on radio shows just for the fun of it, just see what they're doing. Because, somebody at CNN had to be bored?
Did we need one more freakish right-winger on the air? Was he bored?
I think Glenn's gone now, so he figures maybe he has to pick up the lunatic link,
So, let's see. The Jews have now, we now know that the Jews disappoint, Lou Dobbs. I don't know. Maybe he goes to church with Ann Coulter where she wants to perfect Jews and stuff. I don't know. Nobody ever taught Lou the first rule of holes. When you're in one, quit digging. Lou gets busy Lou gets busy with the second shovel.
Mauritius? No. Belize. I don't know. There's got to be something else going on here. How about an Asian ethnic holiday? Is there one? St. Jing Tao Wow?
Wonder how long this radio show is going to last. Maybe he did this because nobody's watching.
Maybe he figures he can get about 1,000 people out there protesting him. People will notice.
Next thing you know, he's going to say, I hope he fails. Apparently that really works as far in the publicity department. But I tell you what, Luke, we've managed to really light up the lines 15 minutes before the program ends.
Let me tell you one quick one here for you.
Yeah, go right ahead.
I've now figured out in my mind what is the Republican third rail.
Rush Limbaugh.
I said Social Security is our third rail. I figured out what the two word totally tells you what the Republican third rail is. Moderate Republican. This whole thing with Meghan McCain.
Oh, Lordy. Yeah, and apparently that Twitter about please stop talking about my body really stung the attack blonde Laura Ingraham. Because did she follow up by calling her a fat ass?
Uh-huh.
I cannot leave this studio for a day, Luke, without them losing their flippin' little tiny pea-sized minds.
Oh, the fun part is like I say, she's been, Megan has been on, she's been on most of the morning news shows. She's been on, she's on The View. And I think eventually she's going to wind up back on Tyra Banks' show because I think she's going to get tired to go work these girls over.
God almighty. I know.
It's just amazing that some of this stuff you're just kind of sitting there going, ah, nah, nah. It's like you say, it's one of those things. It's like, say, let's put out the fire. Let's throw a couple of cans of gasoline on it. I'm sure that'll put it out. Yeah.
And a couple of Bic lighters just to keep things going. Hey, Luke, take it easy, brother.
All right,
good
man,
to hear from you.
Me.
Bye now. St. Jing Tao Wow? Now, I know if you go to a Chinese restaurant, there's a Chinese beer called Qing Dao. Is that where? Oh, dear. Lou, it may be time to become a friend of Bill W. I'm just saying. If you know what I mean. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hey, Kevin.
Yeah, all I have to say, Ann and Lou Dobbs are still perfecting Jews, is turning them into lampshades.
Because he's Lou's disappointed in it.
That's what it means. It's code for turn them into lampshades. It's like, it never surprises me what these people, what filth will come out of these people's mouths now. It never will.
It's just sad. And see, we didn't even finish the clip. Hang on just a minute here, Kevin.
Chinese New Year. We can do that. All right. Thank you, Slade. I mean, what is with all of these ethnic holidays? How about an American day? How about we're all the same kind of day?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, because, that whole Independence Day, nobody knows about that, Kevin. Nobody knows about Thanksgiving.
Come on, do you really think in his heart of hearts that we're all the same?
No. You'd kind of like for that to be the case, but no.
Yeah, if we were all the same... there would be a lot more color making decisions on this bailout and what interest rates are. So we're not all the same. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's F. Scott Fitzgerald talking to Ernest Hemingway. The rich are very different from you and me.
Yeah?
I think you've referred to that in the past, haven't you, Kevin?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have. I have. You know, it's like I was debating, okay, a gentleman who came in and he say, well, you know, you talk about the war on terror. I just have to tell him, look, man, I'm probably the last person Al-Qaeda wants. They want people who look like you. Not to say black people or people of color have not been hurt, but that's usually collateral damage. They're targeting people like you.
Yeah.
So you have a lot more to fear than I do. And where people like you gather.
But under the circumstances, I got a lot more other stuff to fear before I get around to that.
Exactly.
I got explosions taking place 2 miles from my house. I got wild-eyed, exhausted coal truck drivers zipping up and down a two-lane highway in front of my house, hitting their Jake brakes going downhill, not 500 feet from me.
And some of them could be downright obnoxious. I used to drive that 66, like you were mentioning.
Yeah.
And sometimes those truckers with the coal trucks will try to box you in the middle curve.
No, I wouldn't be surprised at all. You know, we got onto 81 today, 81, the 66 runs into. We got onto 81 today, and I watched a semi just run a driver off the road. He was in the left lane. He was coming over into the right lane, and he was coming over onto another where a car was. And the car had no choice but just to, you know, he's blowing his horn and everything. And the truck just came on. The guy wound up off over on the shoulder. I looked at my traveling companions and I said, you know, I think I'd take the next exit. And Lorella said, yeah, just kind of sit there till the knees stop shaking.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. You know, come on. It's like you being ahead or whatever is that important?
Yeah, and when it's and see around here, dig this part. Our coal truck drivers don't have the sense to be paid by the mile or the hour. They're paid by the ton, just like my granddaddy was 70 years ago. So the more they haul, the more they overload their trucks, the more money they make. The more runs they make in a day, the more money they make in general. So that puts a premium on them flying hell-bent for leather up and down these roads and down our mountain, which sort of puts the rest of us at a rather severe disadvantage and, dare I say, hazard.
Oh, yeah. And especially 81, you know, when it rains or snows, it is very, very scary.
It was raining when we drove up. We were lucky we had dry 81 on the way home today, but it was rainy and just icky as we drove up on Saturday.
I don't know if you remember, but sometimes in D.C. I would go and do a weekend in West Virginia.
Right, I remember.
Yeah, and oh, gosh. That was, especially in the wintertime, was some scary driving going 81.
Oh, absolutely.
And especially when you're boxed in between two
trucks. Oh, so you'd bounce over on 66 and then take I-81 north toward Berkeley Springs and Martinsburg and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, I know exactly
what
you're
talking about. Because I used to live in, I didn't live there, but I used to stay at my neighbor's house in Spring Hill, which is right before Martinsburg.
Right. Well, it's beautiful over there. I'm going to be over there, I think, talking about mountaintop removal sometime around the 17th or 18th of April. I'm hoping the weather is good enough, and if it is, and I've got the time to just sort of fiddle around as I drive back, when I go down 81, I'll take one of my favorite roads. I'll get off at Harrisonburg, Virginia, and I'll take U.S. 33 across the Eastern Continental Divide.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty easy.
Oh, wow, what a drive that is.
Oh, yeah, especially in the fall.
In the fall, it's stunning. But in the spring, it's pretty, too, because that's when the The red buds bloom, and usually there's some lilac bushes going and stuff. And if you're in the right place, it smells like perfume. Of course, before you get to the right place, you have to drive. You have to drive down Chicken Alley, and that doesn't smell pretty. That part you go through with your windows up.
I've done that. Anyway, I know you want to wrap up, and you'll probably want to get another call in, so I'm going to free the line up.
Well, thank you, Kevin. It's good to talk to you, my friend, and we'll talk again soon.
How's your son doing?
He's doing great.
Yeah, I heard.
He's healing up right now. The biggest challenge is keeping him from doing too much.
Okay, then.
But he made it. It's very important. He made it to the St. Patrick's Day dance last night, and he only danced slow dances with cute girls.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
See, that was his. Yeah. I'll only dance slow dances with cute girls, so that way you know I won't be straining myself, Dad.
Oh, by the way, you heard about Miranda Richardson?
Yes!
She died.
Yeah, that's just...
God.
Yuck. Yeah. Sad. Yeah. And Ron Silver kicked the bucket, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Ron Silver, you know, I don't know about it. Well, it's sad that he kicked the bucket, but he had some weird political thoughts.
Yeah, well, he flipped on 9/11.
Yeah.
September 11th, 2001. I try not to say 9/11.
Yeah, he just became a whole trip.
Yeah, the Miranda Richardson news was just, went into a coma and then just, is that, wow. Yeah. Kevin, have a great evening, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, buddy. Talk to you soon.
Later. Yeah, bye. Bye. Formerly of the D.C. area, now of Brooklyn, that's our buddy Kevin. So that's it for this evening. Thanks, everybody, for joining this return to the microphone. Sorry if I was a bubble off plumb. I'm just, like I said, whacked, zonked, tired. But you made it a wonderful show. And thanks for all your efforts on behalf of the Clean Water Protection Act. Don't give up. If you've made one call, sent one letter, sent one email, give it a day or so, send another. Give it a day or so, do it again. And for heaven's sakes, talk to your neighbors. And thank you to those of you who stepped up in the last few days and contributed to keeping the horn going. You pushed us closer to the $1,000 we need to make. You've pushed us closer to having $1,000, which is a half of what we need every month to keep things going. We're close to $1,000 now for the first half of the month of March, and it is supremely appreciated. If you've never, if this program and this network matters to you, the PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com works, as does snail mail to HeadOn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia, BECKLEY, West Virginia 25801. I know how hard times are, and it is difficult for me to do this, but it is also, it would be even more difficult for me to just turn the lights off and walk away. And I won't just do that. But if you are able, a lot of this is predicated on, frankly, your support. And thank you so much for those of you who step up every month and those of you who have stepped up in the last few days. You are inventing, you are maintaining an entirely new, entirely different broadcast paradigm, and you are putting it forward while the rest of the world catches up. That makes you a pioneer. Thank you to John Fox, safely now ensconced in his new digs, I think. Congratulations, John. If I was anywhere near there, we'd have a housewarming party. Thanks to Peter Godbold, our IT professional. Thanks to the most overworked, hardest working man in liberal talk, Ben Birch, saved liberal talk in 2002 when he started WhiteRoseSociety.org. He, too, needs your help. WhiteRoseSociety.org. And for their sponsorship of these programs, thank you. And for their undying, untiring work to save all everyone downstream, thanks always go out to Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. They fight the fight they fight upstream because of what they know is going downstream. And they're trying to stop it before it gets to anyone else. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Conversation cussing and discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop renewable. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy!
Feels like a week since I've been behind this microphone. Maybe that's because it has been. Wow, am I happy to be back behind the microphone, back in my happy little studio. But what an invigorating, exciting 5 days I have had. A very special howdy to all of my buddies, all of my friends, all of my comrades in the organizations that make up the Alliance for Appalachia. Very special howdy to folks like Stephanie and JW, Sandra, Dana, Lenny. Wow. What an event. What an event they put together. Breathtaking. It was where I was in D.C. It was the annual week in Washington to help bring an end to mountaintop removal. And I am convinced more than ever after this week, we're going to beat this. We're going to win. The only thing we have to do is wait for the coal thugs to surrender, because we've already won. When you're surrounded by the kind of good energy from organizations like Save Our Cumberland Mountains and Appalachian Mountain Stewards and Coal River Mountain Watch and Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition, when you're surrounded, and that's by no means all of the organizations, it isn't, and I hope no one's, please, I'm not blowing anybody off, it's just too long. The 13 organizations all committed to ending mountaintop removal in West Virginia, Virginia, Tennessee, Kentucky. When you're surrounded by that kind